everybody, and welcome to NFL Live. We're just hours away from week 8. We'll get you ready for Panthers and Falcons. Also going to tell you some surprise teams that might make a playoff push, and you can see them here. Keyshawn Johnson, well, you can't see him yet. Oh, there he is. All right. Whoa. Keyshawn Johnson, there's Dan Orlovsky. Marcus Spears is behind me, and Adam Schefter with us as well. Shefty, let's start with this. What's the latest for Christian McCaffrey tonight?
Well, Laura, the Panthers officially did not activate Christian McCaffrey by the 4 p.m. deadline, which means he is ineligible to play tonight against the Atlanta Falcons. And the next chance for him to play comes November 8th at Kansas City. In the senses, he'll be ready for that game. Meanwhile, Andy Dalton, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, remains in concussion protocol. He's in the building today, still has not passed through concussion protocol tests, which means Sunday night in Philadelphia, it's looking more and more like Ben DiNucci will be the Dallas Cowboys starting quarterback. And then Julian Edelman, the Patriots wide receiver, underwent a knee procedure this morning. He is not expected to play Sunday at Buffalo against the Bills, and he is expected to miss some time. So a Patriot offense that had been struggling now will be struggling without Julian Edelman, Laura.
All right, Adam with us for the rest of the show. Marcus, how big a deal is this Julian Edelman news?
It's not to me. And the only reason is, it's not that Julian Edelman isn't a key contributor, but this is about Cam Newton and how well he can play. It doesn't matter who your receivers are. If he's going to throw one pick out of every five passes, that's beside the point. You could have Jerry Rice out there. So Cam Newton has to elevate his game. And the whole thing we thought about was Cam Newton adding to this offense by his athletic ability. But Julian Edelman, it's a big loss within the facility. But to me, this is about Cam Newton and how he can bounce back.
Yeah, but like the Patriots have only had one good passing game this year, and that was against Seattle. And the big receiver in that game was Julian Edelman. So, I mean, this is a really, really big deal for an offense that's trying to find ways to be better, a passing game that's trying to find ways to generate some positivity. This is a must-win game for New England, a absolute must-win. And Julian Edelman, for everything that people think he is, shows up in big games. To not have him in the must-win game, if the Patriots lose, their season's over.
It hurts. There's no question about it. It hurts that Julian won't have an opportunity to play with Cam in this situation. Much like you said, I believe the same thing. If they lose this football game to the Buffalo Bills, it's a wrap. You might as well kind of start looking forward to 2021.
Yeah.
And for Cam to be effective, he's got to have somebody that he can trust.
Right.
Mm. I mean, he's got to have somebody.
Yeah, guys, Edelman leads all Patriots receivers in targets, receptions, and yards. So that kind of tells you all of it right there. All right, let's get to an AFC North rivalry clash that never disappoints. Steelers at Ravens on Sunday with some serious divisional implications on the line. According to our Football Power Index, Pittsburgh's chance to win the division would jump to 68% with a win. Same goes for the Ravens, as a win would bring their chance to win the AFC North to 70%. So it basically all comes down to this. There's a lot at stake between the 25th meeting of Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh, the most between two head coaches in the Super Bowl era. So, Key, how did the Ravens slow down a QB who was getting the ball out of his hands quicker than anyone else in the NFL, and that would be Big Ben?
Well, you make him hold on to the football, and how you do that is get up in the receiver's face, get up in Juju's face, get up in James Washington's face, get up in Johnson's face, Chase Claypool's face, jam them at the line of scrimmage, disrupt. And I think when you look at the secondary of Baltimore, they can do it. Humphreys can do it. Peters can do it. Smith can do it. And when they're running with them, he's going to pull the ball down and look for that second and third option. And if you're all over him in man-to-man coverage, there's nothing he can do but throw the ball away or get hit in the face.
So they got to be great defending that bunch set that Pittsburgh loves to get into. And then on early downs, they got to go, we're going to be more physical, and we're going to make you try to win this football game throwing it out of our heads. And Key brings up a great point. They got the guys to do it in Baltimore's defense.
Yeah, listen, I love what both of you guys are. And this game, schematically and obviously, you have to have a plan and things you plan on doing. But for me, it boils down to a lot of guys that you and Key mentioned, that Key mentioned off the top with Humphreys and Peters and Jimmy Smith, but also Calais Campbell, Judon, Yannick Ngakoue, who they just signed. As far as the Ravens getting pressure on Ben and making sure when those guys are locked up, you don't allow him to extend plays. I played in this rivalry. This rivalry is about making plays. And usually it's the superstars that come up big when you look at the stat line at the end of the game. We talk about T.J. Watt, how good he's been all season long. Bud Dupree, That's on the other side for the Steelers. So, yeah, we can talk about formations. We can talk about how quick Big Ben is getting the ball out of his hand. This is about beating the man in front of you. And sometimes it's good to get that portion of football back in a league where we have so much jet sweep and so many different formations and so many things offenses are doing to play eye candy. This is a straight up beat the man in front of you.
Yeah, and it's interesting because for a long time, this game was about the line of scrimmage. Like this game was about my five offensive linemen and your four defensive linemen. And now it really is going to be about the perimeter. You know, I've said that the Pittsburgh Steelers offense, at least people-wise, represent the Chiefs in a little bit. And so that's why I think that the Baltimore Ravens will try to bring that physical brand, right, that we're so notorious for with the line of scrimmage. They're going to bring that physical brand out to the perimeter, Key, and try to bang those receivers on the outside and, to your point, make Big Ben hold the football.
You know, as a quarterback, if you got to reset and recock and look again, and somebody's going to be right in your teeth.
Yeah.
You know that in Baltimore – is going to bring that physicality, no question about it.
Yeah, and they'll play it connected, too. That's what it means to, like, tie the coverage to the rush. Your point, hit him at the line of scrimmage, those receivers, and that gives that rush, Marcus knows it, another half a second to get home.
You know, you mentioned the dink and dunk quality sometime of the Steelers' offense. One thing that's interesting, they actually have lacked explosiveness significantly, the second fewest number of 10-yard plays ahead only of the Jets. Shefty, tell me the latest going on with the Giants and their COVID situation.
Well, Laura, Will Hernandez, the Giants offensive lineman, tested positive last night. They did contact tracing and they kept home some of their offensive linemen. So the Giants are operating a similar plan to what the Raiders did last week when they lost Trent Brown and sent home the other offensive lineman that they did get back for the game. The Giants are hoping and believing the same will happen for the Monday night game against Tampa, which had an equipment staffer test positive today. Buccaneers sent that particular individual home as well as another person in close proximity. And the Chargers canceled practice this afternoon after one of their offensive linemen, Ryan Groy, tested positive for COVID-19, kept him home as well, canceled practice for everybody else, virtual meetings for the Chargers who are getting ready for Sunday's game against the Broncos.
Yeah, as it relates to that Monday night game, certainly the Giants O-line, thinking about that Bucs D-line, want to have as many of those guys as healthy as possible. Thanks, Adam, for that. All right, Todd Gurley, look away. Want to take you inside the huddle in moments just before Gurley scored that unwanted touchdown against the Lions. Of course, this was moments before. Take a listen to Matt Ryan giving instructions during the drive.
Don't score.
Yeah, I would.
Don't score.
Down.
Don't score. Get the first. Get the first. Get down.
The give is to Gurley. Gurley through the middle. They're going to let him score, and he went in. That's a big mistake by Todd Gurley.
Oh, man. All right, Marcus, where does the blame lie here?
The coaching staff. What you running a play for? Take a knee. Like, this simple, Laura, it ain't really much to say. Just take a knee. You're trying to win the game with a field goal. You running the time off the clock. You can kneel. Look where they are. Like, who needed to get an inch from the goal line to finish with a field goal to walk off? No. So, and Raheem Morris, credit, took responsibility for that. But also, I mean, look, Todd Gurley is supposed to know that he's not going in the end zone based on Matt Ryan and telling him about the previous play. It was third and one, and he was getting the first down, get down, which he actually got down after that play. And then that was the next play that we just watched when he, you know, went into the goal line. But don't run the damn ball. What you running the play for?
Man, okay, the Falcons would have had a 99% chance to win had Todd Gurley gone down at the one-yard line per ESPN's win probability metric. Dan, you're kind of itching to get in. What do you think?
Well, I mean, because the score was 22-16, right?
Right.
So Marcus is exactly right. Like, all you have to do is take your knees, kick your field goal, then it's 25-16. It's a nine-point lead with a minute left. Like, Marcus is 100%. This is when coaches – they get into the situation of what is the number one goal? Do we not want to give the ball back, or do we want to give them as little time as possible? Like, that's when coaches try to get too cute. I know we want to blame Gurley, but Marcus is right. That should just have been kneel down, kick the field goal, and make them score two possessions in less than a minute.
Yeah, Gurley pointed the finger at himself, too. But either way, the Falcons do get another opportunity tonight. So let's talk about that game. And for more, we check in at the Domino's pregame headquarters. Panthers, Falcons later. Teddy Bridgewater has found success outside the pocket in Carolina, passing for three touchdowns and an NFL-leading QBR of 97 since week 3. For Atlanta, they'll focus on playing all four quarters as they're 1-3 this season. and with a fourth quarter lead, tied for the league's most such losses. If they could just finish the game, things would be a lot different for them. All right, our football power index has the Panthers in this one with a 56% chance to win, but with a projected win margin of just 2 points. So, Dan, the Panthers are sitting at 3-4. Is there reason still, though, for hope in Carolina with what you've seen specifically from their offense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're two plays away from being a 5-2 football team, and sometimes we throw that around like that's a very real thing in Carolina. And I think what I'm excited for tonight is watching this football team in America getting a chance to see a guy in Joe Brady, their offensive coordinator, who's going to be a head coach in the NFL in a short period of time. And he reminds me a lot of a young Sean Payton. They do have a history together, being on the same coaching staff, but the way they use their people, it's exactly like New Orleans does with all their players. Multiple personnel groupings, different players in different places, the different plays or simple plays that you're running a thousand different ways, and understanding what guys do really well, right? Like Robbie Anderson, he's great working one-on-one space against guys, so they put him in the slot sometimes, allow him to win. DJ Moore is a piece. He's just a piece you want to get the football to, so they will put him on some jet sweeps. Robbie Anderson, again, is a guy that you can go one-on-one and go win down the field. Curtis Samuel is a person where they just want to get them moving horizontally. They'll put him in the backfield. They'll hand it off to him. And so I think Joe Brady's doing a lot of what Sean Payton has been notorious for 10-plus years in New Orleans. And I'm excited for America to see how he uses that offense. And the last thing I'll say about the offense is this is not an offense that will hurt themselves. They will not get negative plays. They will not get themselves into bad third down situations, and they won't give the ball away. Carolina's got a really good, sound football team.
You mentioned the Saints in that division, and two of the best teams in the division have quarterbacks over 40. Teddy Bridgewater's 27. You think the Panthers, Key, are kind of setting themselves up to take over the division at some point soon?
I wouldn't be quick to say that at all. They are setting themselves up to be a part of the division and be good in the division just because two 40-year-old quarterbacks are there and Drew Brees and Tom Brady. Tom Brady still looks like he could play a couple more seasons.
He looks 27.
And then when you talk about the backup that's in New Orleans and Jameis Winston, Sean Payton signed him for a reason. Not to just stand there and hold a clipboard, but to also teach him how to play the quarterback position at a professional level and not to throw 30 interceptions. They feel good about him in New Orleans. And when you look at the age of those teams, there, you look at the older quarterbacks and maybe a Gronkowski there and Drew Brees, and you start averaging numbers, so you automatically think that they're old as a team. Don't look at the age. Look at the years of the players on the team. New Orleans, Michael Thomas, 5 years. Kamara, 5 years. You start looking at those type of players, you start to say, well, this team is similar but young in terms of their skill position players as well as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the defensive side of the ball. Carolina's there, but they're not there yet.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit. All right, let's look at our game picks for tonight, and you'll see them right here. All of us on the Panthers. Except somebody. Who's it going to be? Who's picking the Falcons?
Who's going out
Dan
there?
Dan and Key and me picking the Panthers, and that means Marcus Spears is picking the Falcons to win this one 27-21. Marcus, why you like the Falcons tonight?
Okay. At some point, they got to win a damn game that they supposed to win, y'all. Listen, we talking about a team right now that has lost three games. And at the end of the game, they had a 98% win probability. Had it not been for a helicopter kick in Dallas and them standing around looking, the Bears game when Nick Foles came in, they had an opportunity to win that game and close it out. And obviously, we saw Todd Gurley score a damn touchdown he wasn't supposed to score. Or that game should have been won by him. The offense is ranked highly. I think they're like number 7 in the league right now in total offense. Offensive line is bad, but Carolina is not really the team that's getting a lot of pressure and making quarterbacks very uncomfortable. At some point, there has to be an explosion of offense. And it needs to be so much of a blitz of offense between Matt Ryan, Julio Jones being back healthy and looking like his old self, Calvin Ridley obviously emerging, Todd Gurley. Yes, I said Todd Gurley, even though he scored a touchdown when he wasn't supposed to. This should be the night that the Falcons finally have ability to put points on the board and finish a damn game. If not, don't ask me another thing about the Falcons, Laura. I did it for you.
Well, let me just tell you, I am from Atlanta, but let me just tell you, the last time Marcus picked the Falcons, it burned him real bad. So we'll see if they can have redemption for him tonight. Do it for Marcus, Falcons.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Toot toot, Dan Wagon time. All right, hey, listen, Rob Gronkowski's really taken off in recent weeks, perhaps part of his recent appearance on the Dan Wagon. We're not sure. We're going to find out. In any case, Gronk's making the most of his 2020 season with 5 receptions of 20 or more yards. That's second among tight ends behind only Travis Kelce. That's a whole lot of fun. All right, this week, we got to find out who's going to be on the Dan Wagon. Go ahead, Dan.
I'm going to go north with my wagon. I like that sound effect. Going Justin Jefferson, the Minnesota Vikings rookie receiver. And this is why. He's become a top 10 receiver in the NFL. Not rookie. A top 10 receiver in the NFL. His toughness, his ability to make the big play. He's been outstanding in the red zone route running. Check this out. Every time they throw him the ball, he averages 15 yards. Every time they throw him the ball, he averages 15 yards. That's more over the last 10 seasons than Odell Beckham. That's more than Julio Jones. At this point, he's got more receiving yards than Odell did his rookie year. He has become a big-time playmaking number one wide receiver. And my guess is he will do more than he's done up at this point. He'll be exploding after this kind of spot on the Dan Wagon. It'll be a hit.
Once you get a seat on the Dan Wagon, you just...
Dude, we've had Herbert. We've had Gronk. We've had Key's favorite player, Josh Allen.
Key loves the Dan Wagon. All right, we're going to leave it there because we don't want to get bogged down with the Dan Wagon. I will say the great thing about Justin Jefferson is he can also dance. He's got great moves.
I've done it on the show.
I know. We're not going to do that right now.
Justin can dance.
That's a bright spot for the wide receiver position. But as we look at the injury report, the news gets worse for the wideouts. Shefty, you already told us at the top of the show that Julian Edelman would be out this week against the Bills. There are some other big names, though, at the position that we need to be aware of. What's the latest about Michael Thomas in New Orleans?
Laura, not all news is bad. Michael Thomas actually returned to practice today. And he's been out since week one, since suffering the high ankle sprain on this particular play and then suffering a grade one hamstring strain during practice last week. But he was back at practice today, an encouraging sign for his availability Sunday against the Chicago Bears, who could be without Allen Robinson, who remains in concussion protocol. The Chicago Bears took this big hit on Monday night. Obviously, a short week makes it even tougher for Robinson to come back to play this week against the New Orleans Saints, who could have Michael Thomas back. And Chris Godwin obviously had surgery on that fractured finger this week. And Bruce Arians last night talked about the fact that it could be longer than just 1 week, but that's why the Buccaneers have the quote-unquote the insurance policy. And the insurance policy is Antonio Brown, who during his workout yesterday, Bruce Arians said looked tremendous. And so Antonio Brown is on track to be back in week 9. And we don't know if Chris Godwin will be back then, but the Buccaneers appear set at receiver anyway.
Yeah, I mean, listen, some people, Adam, said maybe they don't even need Antonio Brown, but they are dealing with some health issues on that wide receiver core, so maybe it makes sense. Thanks for that. And as you mentioned, it has been a tough week for some of these wide receivers at the position, but it started with the loss of Odell Beckham Jr. on Sunday. So the offense is going to look a little different, but look, here's the thing. The Browns have made their intentions quite clear with Kevin Stefanski at the helm. They're rushing on 67% of their first down plays. That's by far the highest rate in the league this season. In fact, the only team with a higher rate over the last 10 seasons is the 2014 Cowboys. Remember, DeMarco Murray on that team ran for over 1,800 yards and 13 15 touchdowns that season. So, Dan, where do you think that Odell Beckham Jr.'s absence will be felt the most on Sunday?
Yeah, it'll be in the run game. You know, every Monday, defensive coordinators have to sit down, and they have to formulate their plan to stop certain offenses, right? And so one of the first questions that they have to ask when playing the Browns is, okay, what do we do with Odell? Like, do we have a corner that we feel comfortable putting in one-on-one situations? And if we don't, that means we have to have a safety over to that side or over the top with help. That body is now no longer near the line of scrimmage. That helps the run game. It's one less body or a half a body that's down there to stop that run by Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb and this Browns offense. You know, I played with Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson and Reggie Wayne, and I remember our coaches would be very specific, like, hey, if we're going to run this run play, let's run it towards those guys. They knew that defenses would usually add two people in coverage to that single receiver. And so it helped our run game so much. So, like, some of those five-yard runs that turn into 12-yard runs may not anymore because there's going to be an extra body or half body down near the ball. So I think the greatest impact is going to be in that Browns run game and really some of those chunk runs, those 10-plus-yard runs. And don't also keep – like, he was really good blocking this year. I know people don't like to talk about that with – the diva wide receiver Odell is that people think, but like he was really good blocking downfield.
I think the offense is still run as usual, right? I think that when you look at what they would do, whether it's Higgins in the lineup, People Jones in the lineup, whether Landry's getting the ball, to me, that's not, Odell isn't the problem. The problem is Baker Mayfield. Being able to understand how much better he could potentially be by not locking on to his favorite receiver, not locking on to number 13. Yeah. You know, Dan, as a quarterback, you find the guy that you trust the most no matter what the play is called because that's the guy who's delivered for you. Mm-hmm. That's the guy you have a rapport with. And I think by removing Odell from the lineup, now he has to go through his progressions, C1, C2, get to 3. If it's not there, check it down to somebody opposed to staying locked on, zeroed in, only on Odell Beckham. Mm.
Well, I'm glad you guys had that offensive talk because, you know, that's usually what we're talking about with the Cleveland Browns. But I'm going to take you to the other side of the ball because I think they fly under the radar for not being very good because we are so focused on Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. and what this offense is doing. When you look at the Cleveland Browns defense, and we're talking in context of if Cleveland can legitimately be a team to make a deep playoff run and get into the Super Bowl, and they're going to have to get tremendously better, guys. They are 29th in the NFL against the pass. They're 21st ranked overall defense, and they are ranked 30th in points giving up 31 points a game. And we saw Joe Burrow having a successful outing. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because Las Vegas Raiders can gut you offensively if they have it going. We've seen Derek Carr and his unit against the New Orleans Saints. We've seen them against the Kansas City Chiefs, and we know what type of potential they have to have offensive firepower. So as much as we talk about Baker Mayfield and the loss of OBJ, which is going to be a huge impact, in my opinion, you look across the ball, there are some things that they need to get fixed in a hurry in Cleveland defensively, especially playing against the teams that they have on their schedule.
Yeah, Marcus, you bring up a great point because the Raiders' offense is really good. I'd say on defense, like, they just lack really good communication. I mean, there's so many different times where guys run just uncovered in their secondary. I think this is a really, really big week for Cleveland because they obviously have a really big win last week. And, Marcus, you brought up this point like, all right, it was the Bengals. You know, this team with Baker Mayfield as their quarterback is 5-12 against teams that are 500 or better. So relatively average to above average football teams. Cincinnati's not one. They're 5-12. Baker's got 24 touchdowns and 25 picks. So I want to go back to the point that you made at the beginning of the week. Like, all right, you did it against the Bengals. Now do it against a team that we all think the Raiders are a good, solid football team. It's going to take
pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take the defense playing better. And Baker's got to have another good game. You can't do it 1 week in the NFL.
Well, and you brought up the point, Dan, about OBJ. It can hurt them in the run game. No team has faced 7 or more defenders in the box this season more than the Cleveland Browns. Mm. So they see that all the time. People know how they want to defend them. The Seahawks handed their first loss by the Cardinals in week 7. Now another matchup inside this division, this time the 49ers. And Russell Wilson threw 3 picks last week. I bet that doesn't happen again. Good luck, by the way, slowing down this Seattle offense. They're scoring a touchdown on nearly 40% of their drives, the highest rate of any team since the undefeated Patriots in 2007. The Seahawks also strike in quickly as they rank 26th in terms of plays per drive. But on the other hand, the Niners defense allowing a touchdown on just 16% of their opponent's drives, second behind only the Bears this year. So, Dan, you think there's actually a real simple formula that leads to a 49ers win against the Seahawks? What is it?
I feel even better about it after hearing you read those stats. I think if the San Francisco 49er defense gets three stops, they win the game. Like, stops could be a three and out. It could be just forcing a punt. Obviously, a takeaway would be in that as well, because what they've done offensively is they just own the football game. Like, in the past two games that the San Francisco 49ers have played, the time of possession is almost 80 to 40, 80 minutes to 40 minutes. And so they're forcing teams to play sideline to sideline. They want to play horizontal football with the way they're playing their offense, and they're going to force Seattle to be really, really efficient on offense. And their scheme, like the defensive scheme, is built to not give up big plays. The stat that you just gave of not allowing a ton of touchdowns per how many drives they have to play is huge. And so Seattle's going to have to do more with less. Like, they're going to get three less possessions than normal this game. And so while they've been great on offense, like, they're going to have to score. If they get six, seven possessions, they're going to have to score almost every possession in some capacity to win this football game. If San Francisco gets three stops on defense, they'll win this game because of the style they'll make it.
Oh, we. Usually you say something and I want to fight you and disagree, but I'm with you. With one caveat, though, I think it needs to be early. Okay. If it's not early and you allow Russell Wilson and this offense to get going and you go up, you go down 14 or 17-3 or 17-0, then they are in trouble, because I don't believe that this San Francisco offense is built to play from behind as far as deep shots and pushing the ball down the field. I think Deebo Samuel being out too is a huge deal, Dio, with what he offers to this offense and how he changes how defenses have to respond. We talk about threatening leverage and changing the eye discipline of linebackers. Well, Deebo Samuel is that guy that does that for the San Francisco 49ers. So with that, and also with Russell's ability to throw three interceptions last week against Arizona and still put up 34 points, they need to get these stops early if they plan on it paying dividends in the win column. Because if you get behind the Seattle, you can almost Katie bar the door, bro. It's over.
You know, the way that I look at it, no matter if Deebo Samuel's in the lineup or whoever is playing wide receiver, great offensive coordinators, and Kyle Shanahan certainly is a good play caller, will figure out how to expose Seattle's defense, in particular the secondary. You go back and you look at the tape of Cam Newton playing against them in week two and see what he did against them, how he torched them. You look at the Dallas Cowboys. You also may want to take a look at last week against Kyler Murray, what he was able to do against
them. That's a good point, yeah.
That's how you do it. Jimmy Garoppolo, last two games, one against the Rams, 70% completion percentage, 80% up in New England and Foxborough. You look at that tape and you say to yourself, we're going to attack them that way. We're going to make them beat us if they can by stopping our receivers, whoever's out there. Mm-hmm. You make Jimmy Garoppolo the guy that he was when New Orleans, last year against New Orleans, everybody said, well, Jimmy Garoppolo can't do this, he can't do that. He went right down the field, methodically was throwing the ball. Best game so far as a San Francisco 49er. Then you look at last week. He did what he was supposed to do in New England. Going up against Seattle, I think he'll be fine throwing the ball.
Yeah, you better hope if you're a 49ers fan or the 49ers themselves that he is fine, and then to your point that they follow your formula, because it's a tough road ahead for the Niners. Their next five opponents, a combined 74% of their games thus far, they have won those. So it's going to be tough road ahead for those 49ers.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
New on NFL Live here right now, Julian Edelman, of course, out for the Patriots this week and, of course, had a precautionary standard knee procedure this morning. Cam Newton was just recently asked about what he'll miss most about Julian Edelman. Here's what he had to say.
His wisdom, surprisingly enough. I got to check on him, man. He's my guy. His presence was missed, you know, today. And, you know, what he brings to this team, he's more than just an unsung hero. He is, you know, everything the Patriots represent. Hard, you know, tough, resilient, gritty, you know. That's Julian Edelman.
So certainly Cam Newton going to miss his favorite target a lot. And just a reminder, Edelman leads all Patriots receivers in targets, receptions, and yards. Ah, so many legends have played in this rivalry, and we've got a big one going down in Baltimore Sunday. It's just the fifth time in NFL history featuring a 6-0 or better team versus a reigning MVP. And only once before has the MVP knocked off the unbeaten team. That was back in 1985. Dan Marino and the Dolphins beat the Chicago Bears, handing them their only loss of that entire season. Let's get to Adam on this one. On Sunday, we're going to get a first in Steelers-Ravens rivalry history. What is that?
Well, what's amazing about this, Laura, is even though it's Lamar Jackson's third year in the league, this will mark the first time that both he and Ben Roethlisberger have started in the same game in this rivalry. Their paths just have not crossed until they will this Sunday. Either Ben Roethlisberger's been out with injury or Lamar Jackson hasn't been ready to be put into the starting lineup, but neither one of these quarterbacks has squared off against each other in the same game the way they will for the very first time this Sunday. Ben Roethlisberger, Lamar Jackson, the past, the present, all meeting up for the first time.
I love that note. That's so interesting. You wouldn't think it based on how long these guys have both been around. But anyway, all right, Key, if you are calling this game for the Steelers defense, what does the plan look like against Lamar?
I'm going to play cover two man, and I'm going to play zone. And I'm going to make sure at times I'm not going to stay in cover two man all the time, because if you turn your back to Lamar and something happens, he's going to hit them gaps. I'm going to make sure that I have lane integrity with my defensive linemen, that they're gap control. But I want to make sure that I'm watching. I want to make sure my defenders is looking straight at him at all times. And I'm going to force him to beat me with his arm. Throwing the football on the perimeter to Hollywood Brown or whoever you have out there. Clearly, you don't have the necessary receivers you believe you have, because you went out and you signed a guy named Dez Bryant who hasn't played since 2017. So right there, that tells me you're suffering at the receiver skill position. So I want him to show me that he can beat me by throwing the football. I know you can by running. But if I'm watching you, it's going to be hard as hell to beat me. I'm not spying you. I'm not doing any of those things, Marcus. I'm just going to simply play some zone, and I'm going to be watching you.
They're going to dare Lamar just to throw the ball to the perimeter to beat him. And that's why, you know, Lamar's going to have to step up and do that. Those receivers on the outside are going to have to win. Pittsburgh's not going to make the easy kind of make it easy in the middle of the field for Baltimore in this offense.
Marcus, what do you think about what Dan just showed us?
Yeah, it's so what I've been trying to scream. And every time you say something about Lamar needs to improve his passing and the Baltimore Ravens need to evolve, people think it's an indictment on Lamar Jackson. A part of it is, because he does not have the requisite weapons. I don't believe he does, in order to have a guy that can bail him out. We talk about Odell Beckham Jr. with Baker Mayfield and having a guy out there that you can identify. I like Brown, but I don't think Hollywood Brown is a one in this league. I believe he's a guy that can work the slot and be a very successful receiver for a long time, or even work the opposite of your number one guy. But what Dan is showing is why they need to evolve their passing game if they plan on winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Marcus, the other thing that I think is a narrative that people talk about with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson in general is that they can't play from behind and can't win from behind. So what happens if they go down early in this game against the Steelers?
Well, Laura, when we start talking about these teams like the Ravens, and we have the regular season where they win a bunch of games, but are they for real? Are they seriously in contention to win Super Bowls when we know they have to face who they have to face? Look, They don't play well from behind because they're not built to play well from behind. This is a running football team at its core. Everybody knows it. So that's why you've seen them struggle in the games where they have to actually be prolific with their backs against the wall. When they come out and jump on you, they can get rolling and it rolls downhill fast on the opposing defense. But if we're going to talk about Super Bowl and beating the Kansas City Chiefs or beating AFC teams that put up points, they are going to have this element to their game in order to do so.
Bottom line, they got to go get an alpha dog. They got to go do exactly what the Buffalo Bills did for Josh Allen. Go find them a young, talented receiver like a Diggs if they have Super Bowl aspirations. Yeah. That's what they have to do.
Reminder, we're like 5 days away from the trade deadline. It's on November 3rd, so we'll see.
Foreshadowing.
If they can pick somebody else up. It could be big for Lamar. All right, time for one more thing before we go. Let's begin with Adam Schefter.
Jaguars quarterback Gardner Minshew underwent x-rays this week that showed he had fractures in his thumb, a sprained ligament. His status for next week is uncertain. The Jaguars have a couple of other quarterbacks, Jake Lipton and Mike Glennon, that they could turn to. So we don't know who will be playing quarterback in Jacksonville when they get back from the bye, but Gardner Minshew obviously has been dealing with a significant thumb injury.
Hey, y'all, guess what's about to happen? Le'Veon Bell about to go play against the Jets. And we all talked about Le'Veon Bell still having juice, and he showed some of that against Denver. Kansas City didn't deploy him much, but they gave him opportunities, and he made those plays. I expect Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy to let Le'Veon shine against the New York Jets.
I don't know how many people will be watching this football game tonight, Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons taking on Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina Panthers, but this is somewhat of a small audition for the San Francisco 49ers for Matt Ryan for next year, given the fact that he probably won't be in Atlanta on the rebuilding process. He can join Kyle Shanahan again.
I'm obsessed with football, so I'll watch it. The other day, I had a little fun with Trevor Lawrence and the Jets. But listen, Trevor Lawrence should go to the Jets with the number one pick. Their new general manager, Joe Douglas, his first three rounds this year has been really good pick-wise. So you got a general manager that can make good picks. The next 3 years, you got 27 of them. With the Sam Darnold trade, you'll have five first-round picks. The Jets hit those. They'll be in great situation.
Yeah, Trevor tried to act like maybe he would go back to school. I mean, Shefty, are we putting anything on the bottom line about Trevor Lawrence here? No?
Well, let's put a couple of things. I don't think Trevor Lawrence, I think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. I think he comes out. And we'll put also there that Matt Ryan won't be the quarterback of the 49ers next year, Key. How about that one?
I know you know. Who knows?
Hey, Marcus, you know the
day. You know the day, but wait till tomorrow.
Gase getting traded?
Adam Gase is still going to be with the Jets as far as we know. All right, anyway, we'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live.
Trump.
Have fun tonight.